For March the 31st, 2023, we talk about Resident Evil 4, Horizon, Call of the Mountain, the Diablo 4 beta, and much more. Welcome to Level 452. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. Thanks for understanding the week off. Just took a week off for recording. Generally across the network in order to get, caught up on work and get a little bit ahead. Because
get your ducks in a row.
Yes, nah. to line them all up in a little bathtub sink, just going in a circle. Sorry, I've been following a new duck account on Twitter and get lots of cute duckling videos. Aww. No, just trying to get things cleared up. I've been running around with my hair on fire today, getting all of like the portable recording stuff together. It's been a very long time since we've done a live event, so that means all of the stuff that we use for that kind of thing is just all tucked away, and I'm testing equipment and testing cables and making sure that everything's good before it goes in the box.
Sounds like it's time for a montage.
You have to say, when you say it that way, I just imagine your show as just like a carrot top type thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've got like a big box here. I got a rolling crate to wheel the stuff in. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of moving parts. So just trying to get that, and also like working on the content of the panel that we're doing. So it's a whole thing.
You don't need content planned.
No, I can just wing it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So just trying to figure out. Yeah, looking forward to it. I'm doing all this stuff now, so I don't have to do a lot of stuff tomorrow. The last thing I want to, like, basically I want to have the car packed by like lunchtime tomorrow, so I can just relax on Wednesday night and then get up and roll out on Thursday morning to drive up. So that's what's been going on with me. The least relaxing time off imaginable. Oh gosh. Ben, how about you? What you been up to?
Most of what I've been up to I'll talk about in the later part of the show, but I will mention this part. I started reading a science fiction book called Hyperion. In part because it was recommended through the makers of Returnal. They like cited it as kind of a pseudo inspiration for their game. I don't know. I'm like 100 pages in out of 500, but it's pretty good. Nice. It won a Hugo Award in the 80s, and Reddit is talking about it a lot. So
nice.
There you go.
Yeah. Gotta love that old sci-fi. Mm. Now I've got some Ursula K. Le Guin that I have been hankering to reread. Mm. Yeah. I've never heard of Hyperion, but it looks neat.
Yeah. When you have a week off, you should really dig into it.
Yeah, next time that happens. Oh gosh. David, how about you?
Yeah, no, this week I turned too old.
Oh, happy birthday. we were off there.
Yeah. That's about it. Went to ye olde Chinese restaurant and ate way too much pretty much everything.
Nice.
I imagine you're joking, but there is a ye olde coffee shop in where you live, I believe, right?
I wouldn't. Yeah, yeah. So this is the Chinese restaurant that went viral a couple years back. There was a fight between two people over crab legs. Someone was taking all the crab legs, and both people proceeded to grab one of the crab tongs and then like fence with them.
Actually crab fight.
Yes. That sounds like a Marx Brothers bit. That's like Three Stooges shit.
Yep.
Huh.
See, I don't know. Huntsville has a surprising amount of memes come from it. Cause yeah, we've also got the bed invader.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's, that auto-tune song that is kind of, I don't know. it's a little bit making light of weird stuff. Oh man. But happy birthday. And
hey, thank you.
Nice. Yeah, you are one of a handful of people I know. Is it a normal thing to, is it a tradition to get Chinese, or was that just, what sounded good?
That's pretty much what sounded good.
Gotcha. Yeah. I worked with somebody who had a big, basically just blew out a Chinese buffet with all of her friends, every year for her, for her birthday.
That's an odd choice of words to describe that.
Yeah. No, just like way too many people for like the private party area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of my life goals is to get bucket list times is to get thrown out of an all you can eat buffet for eating too much.
Do the Simpsons thing.
I am the reason it's now called All You Care to Eat.
Dennis, how about you?
I'm doing good. It feels like forever ago because of the way our breaks have worked out. But I went and saw an amazing concert a couple weeks ago. By a band called Bit Brigade.
Okay.
And the cool thing about this band is that one of the members doesn't play an instrument per se. They do a SNES speed run.
Oh, I feel like I've seen...
you probably have seen video of this online somewhere. Like,
yeah.
Amazing act. I got a double feature. I got to see DuckTales and Mega Man 2.
Yeah, yes. No. They've performed, I believe, if I didn't see them at Portland one year, they absolutely performed at Austin.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I'd believe that. I think I found out they're from Georgia,
mm-hmm.
Which I was fully expecting, like a Portland or something like that. But
yeah.
I mean, these guys go hard. So it's covers of those NES soundtracks played in time with the game as their fifth member is speedrunning it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the soundtrack isn't on in the game being played, but all the sound effects are there.
Yeah.
And not only is he doing a speed run, but he is like timing things with the music, which is just absolutely amazing to watch.
Yeah.
And you know they timing things so that they can like finish a song before he gets into the boss area, or you know spends a little bit of extra time on the menu the first time he's there, so you can really hear that opening theme and all this cool stuff. It's so fun.
Like down to, you know, they do the victory fanfare and like Mega Man. So like they'll beat the boss and they just, they'll just break down, stop whatever they're doing. And dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. And man, what you realize when you're seeing, cause you know, it's like a traditional rock band set. So, drummer, and guitarists.
Wait, you mean like the video game?
Yeah, right. I wish. Yeah, it's the next they're going to cover Rock Band. It's just them playing covers. But the like that NES music goes hard.
Oh yeah, I mean especially like those games that they picked. I mean Mega Man famously. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, the lead guitarist is just up there shredding the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they made a little joke that like they played through DuckTales. And he's like, "Now for our second and last song of the night, but it's also 40 minutes, so it should be good." You know, go right into it. But like they are literally for the entire speed run, just shredding.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much fun. I saw it at a place called Southgate House Revival, which is like an old church that still has the stained glass that's been renovated into a concert hall.
Yeah. Down in Newport. Was it in the, mm-hmm. was it in the ballroom or was it in the main room?
It was in the main room.
Nice.
So yeah, the one that doesn't have the bar with draft in it,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, like the main stage, I guess I should say.
Yeah,
super cool.
Nice.
So yeah, that was an excellent experience. I went on a complete whim. A friend had mentioned it, and for some reason, it registered in my head that it was like, you know, in Columbus or something like that. Like it was too far away to drive. And then the night of, he's like, "All right, headed out to Southgate House Revival," mm-hmm. and I'm like, "Say what now?" hold my calls.
Yes. Oh, that's cool. I mean, that's awesome that Southgate House did that. That's a bit of an unconventional show.
It is very unconventional, and I hope they'll be back. It was a very warm reception for them.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds very sweet. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we have done some banter. And I think that we ought to talk about some games and stuff. So we got to do the regular kind of show, what with Grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And we can get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm going to go first.
I was going to say, show of hands, who's played Resident Evil Remake?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't got $60 for a game. What are you talking about?
I've been playing the Resident Evil 4 Remake. Woo-hoo. Yeah. Because this has been a workation kind of deal, I've only just now gotten to the castle. So I've done the kind of the village the start, so roughly the first third of the game, two and a half 2.5 out of 3 of the game of the it's real good. So I talked about kind of some of the basics the previous episode, because I talked about the demo, which kind of covered some of the generalities of play, the way that they loosened up the controls. It very much controls and feels a lot like the Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes, kind of looser aim, faster movement. You're no longer pinned to a particular spot when you are shooting. And kind of along with that faster, looser control, at least in the demo, I remarked about how many enemies they throw at you. Right. Mm-hmm. And I figured, okay, well, maybe that's going to relent a little bit. Like they want to, shock you at the start there. No, there are so many of the Ganados, so many of the villagers, the monsters and stuff that just get slammed at you. And so many times you just hear that atrocity just right behind you. And then there you go. Like they've gotten around you. This is a frantic and very difficult game to the point where people who've played the game, you remember, it's one of the bigger set pieces, the cabin defense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're there with Luis and, you're fighting people on the ground floor and then they start, coming in through the top. So you got to go upstairs and hold off. Like that took a few tries for me and I just barely got through by the skin of my teeth with how many enemies were really flooding in there. This is a hard game. But it has that adaptive difficulty stuff that Resident Evil 4 has, to where it's meeting out the resources to where you're kind of just always have just enough to squeak by.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's the addition of the parry mechanic where you can, with melee attacks, parry with your knife and it uses some of your knife durability. Your knife has durability now. It's a neat system. I like how they handle it. You can use that to like even swipe axes out of the air and stuff. I'm sorry, I'm kind of bunching up my thoughts here, but I am really, really pleased with how they have recaptured a lot of the feeling. And yeah, it is a stressful, stressful game to play.
I
perfect kinda, for relaxing.
I kind of see this game as like a companion to The Last of Us, where it's like, they didn't fuck it up. It's like they kept the good parts in, and the part where they depart from it, they improve upon it. Or take something broken to make it better.
Yeah. So you're speaking of The Last of Us television show.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you've played it.
I have beaten it. Yeah.
You have beaten it. Holy shit! Whoa. Okay. Well, I mean, the only other thing that I was going to say is like, I was also worried about, how they were going to represent the spaces and what they were going to do with the boss fights, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, like how much are they going to mess with the level design? How much are they going to, I was worried they're going to screw it up. And also with the boss fights, Resident Evil 4's boss fights, I don't really care for an awful lot, actually. They kind of, bullet just, it's a Resident Evil
sponges. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They at least so far, the major boss fights that I've that I've done, Del Lago, the Gigante and Batora's, the chieftain, right? Mm-hmm. All of them have kind of, sidestepped that. and Del Lago is infinitely better without the QTE, without the button mashing. Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have the QTE at the end of it either. They're like surprise one to drag you down. I was a little bit sad that that was missing, but that's fine.
They have improved the boss fights to my mind. And the level design, like they've changed them, but in order to add more interest, I think. Mm-hmm. Like they're a little bit more dense, a little bit more snarled. Like they offer up, I mean, you know, some really fun. It almost feels like they did like a Resident Evil 8 pass over some of the combat spaces. I'm thinking specifically of the fortress and the factory, right? Mm-hmm. Where those were like really tactically interesting spaces. Mm-hmm. There, but they feel appropriate to the game. Like I recognize roughly where I am. Like I know that this is the fishery. I know that, you know, Emesis, etc. And it's all very much aided as well by the fact that there is no loading screen in between the areas. Mm-hmm. And so the entire thing does feel like it is one big open map, even if you are, you know, progressing down, you know, linear kind of places. Though in the village, it does open up when you get the boat. You can visit much more spaces, much more places. It is not just going to get the cross the lake and then you're done. Like it kind of becomes a little, you know, you've got a few different things to grab. Also, weirdly, I didn't expect the remake to add more puzzles, but there are puzzles in this in a way. Yeah,
they rebranded like all of the puzzles. I don't think they have any that are the same from the original. If I'm
So I'm just gushing right here, and that's all that I, you know, kind of thought about it because I've not played, you know, the entire thing. I'm going to throw to you, Ben, because I'm curious, like, how the back two thirds holds up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty consistent throughout. Like, I think it's good all the way through. Like they, you know, it's like they didn't rehaul the game by any means. They added a few quality of life improvements, and like just the overall experience is better. It is like resting on the shoulders of a great game. So in that sense, like part of why this game is so great is because the original game is so great. But like, for example, like the art of the game is like vastly improved. And it's just like, it's just a much more beautiful experience than the original one. Which I mean, I guess makes sense because the original one was made like what, 17, 18 years ago now?
18 years ago, 2005.
But, it was made when you weren't thinking as much about art direction, you were thinking more about like, what can I do with my limited set of tools? And just now that that's not a concern from a technology standpoint anymore, you can really lean into the art direction side.
Like I think a good way to think of it is like, if you imagine, like you brought this point up, if you imagine like the castle from Village or whatever, that's basically the quality that you're dealing with the castle here in terms of like art style. And it's nice. Like, oh, this is gorgeous.
I mean, the other thing about the art direction and just, you know, technology, you know, GameCube was pretty powerful system for its time, especially for its, you know, price. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to the original Resident Evil 4, even on, you know, even with like HD texture mods or whatever, something that it lacks is lighting, by which I mean there is too much light. Like it is a very well-lit, flatly lit game, and you know, for a lot of it there are some scenes where, you know, they can just do kind of like a global dimming on everything. Here though, light and shadow are incredibly intense. Mm-hmm. And that makes this like, it actually gives the game a shot at being scarier because of that. Mm-hmm. Like you cannot have horror without you know, without lighting disparities. And now this is available, you know, with and without ray tracing. Like I've done comparisons between the two of them, just turning it off and on between saves.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I didn't know that. Do they have ray tracing on the PS5 version or is it just PC?
Yeah, there's PS5. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
You have to turn on the mode to favor resolution
instead of performance.
And the hit isn't too bad.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Outside of the art, though, because art, like, vastly improved, gameplay-wise, like, they add just a bunch of tiny, small things, like, here and there that, like, generally improve the experience. So, like, you already mentioned the knife pairing, which is, like, a completely new mechanic that wasn't in the original one, and they play around with that and, you know, make you do that in certain cases that are that are good effect, you know. It's well utilized. There's missions now, like side missions in the game, mm-hmm. where the merchant will give you like kind of side quests where it's like they had this in the original one, RE4, as far as like shooting medallions and finding medallions, but now they have this for multiple different things like scattered throughout the game. What you're rewarded with if you do that is there's a secondary economy of spinels, which was just like a gem from the original one that you'd sell for money. In this case, it's its complete own economy where there's like special items that the merchant has that you can only buy with spinels. So it's just like a small change, but it just makes it like a lot more unique and it improves the experience. The gun upgrading is pretty similar to the original one. Mm-hmm. They add a few new guns that they didn't have in the original one that they give you very early on. I think it's like the arrow shooter, the bolt caster or something.
Yeah, the bolt thrower that becomes your a mine thrower kind of thing. With the benefit, if you're just using the standard darts, you can recover them from the environment or from bodies.
Yeah. I think there's a couple other ones that I won't spoil since they're later in the game. That's great. The fact that the puzzles are new are great. And then they do a lot to kind of play around with players' expectations since they know like so many people are playing this that have already played the original one. There's certain points in the game where they kind of mess with your expectations. And I'll give an early example that you've already seen, Cole, that hopefully isn't too spoilery. But an example of this is the clock tower in the village blows up and falls over. Bifurcates the village. And it's like now blocking your path. And it's something that is like a complete surprise to you since that never happened at all in the original game.
Yeah. This is what I want out of remakes. This is all I want.
To acknowledge that it exists, like that it exists in conversation with the previous one, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and even before they did that, at the beginning of the village part, if you try and climb up the clock tower, once you grab an herb, the floor collapses. So it's like even that's not like a bastion of where you can kind of like hide and just like cut zombies if they try and come up or something like that.
Yeah.
So they do a great job of that, of like playing with your expectations and messing with your expectations.
The way that they changed the Chainsaw Sisters, that was so good.
Like how they introduced them or whatever.
That whole encounter is, you know, kind of different, right?
Yeah. It's good. It's a good game. It's my cynical like back of my mind is, I'm worried that people are just going to see the success of the game and not realize the amount of work that went into it. Mm. And then just start being like, all right, now we need to make remakes of these like 15-year-old games and like make money off of it. And then like put out shitty remakes. But this one is good. And I assume Resident Evil 2 was good, even though I didn't play the original one, but that was a good game on its own. So
yeah. Resident Evil 2. Yeah. I think that both versions are amazing, but like you can get a hold of both of them. Like they exist in conversation with each other.
Yeah.
God, give me the Code Veronica remake, you assholes.
And then I think one thing that's interesting as far as like replayability, because I'll probably go back through and play like a second time. This is one thing they added that I think is really cool is they have shooting ranges at some of the stops. I can't remember if they had this in the original one or not.
Yeah, there were shooting ranges, but it was a way to get extra money, I think.
Okay, so in this one, the mechanic's really interesting where for a given like challenge, like they'll have different challenges at a shooting range based on what weapons you have. Mm-hmm. And then based on what weapon it is, the way the targets appear is kind of customized to that. So for example, if you're doing a shotgun shooting range, they'll have like targets where you kind of have to manage the spread of it, where it's mm-hmm. like there's a good guy and a bad guy, and you have to make sure you shoot the bad guy without having the spread kill the good guy as well.
Yeah.
These are really cool because they have a lot of different rewards on them where you're rewarded with tokens, kind of like pachinko tokens. Mm-hmm. And there's a like slot machine-esque thing or a toy machine, I guess.
Like a gachapon, like the toy bubbles in the front of Walmart. Yeah.
And so you have to put in 3 tokens to that and you're given a case charm. And it's a charm that you can put on your briefcase, the one that's holding all your guns.
It's a little keychain and it gives you perks.
Yeah. And so based on how well you do on the shooting range, you could get like a silver or gold, or possibly there's more beyond that. I'm not sure. But then that dictates the possible rarity of the charms you get. And then that has better benefits in game. So yeah. For example, I had one rare one where the cost of crafting ammunition is one less gunpowder for each one. Yeah. Which, that's another mechanic that they added that's really cool, is crafting ammunition is something you can do in the system. It's just a small change, but it's really, really nice because it helps you customize the experience to do whatever you want to do.
Like, isn't that a key part of survival horror, is running out of ammunition, though?
Not in this one.
I object.
Not so in this.
You certainly can run out of ammunition in this game if you want to.
Oh yeah, if you're trying to. David, what were you saying?
So how limited are like the money and stuff like that? Because I recall in the previous game, you know, you couldn't go back and replay levels and stuff like that, so things were quite limited. Is it the same way here, or could you just, you know, upgrade everything if you wanted to?
I mean, it's similar in this where you have to pick what you want to invest in. So, like, you might be able to maximize, like, one or two guns all the way through.
That's too bad.
Say that much. I mean, you can, if your goal is to maximize, like, all the weapons, you can just do a second playthrough and you start with all the guns where they're at.
Okay, but there's no way to, like, go back and replay levels.
No, just because it's a linear kind of game. I don't know if there's a place where like enemies respawn. I don't think there's a way to I don't think that there is a way to grind for or farm for it, which I'm kind of happy for, because I really don't like grinding. That said, anything that you put into a gun, you know, if you get a if you see something else that you want, you can always sell that gun, and the value goes up with every upgrade that you put into it.
Okay.
So like, you know, it wouldn't be possible to like upgrade every single gun that you get all the way every time. But you can always have at least one or two really, really well upgraded guns. You get most of what you put in back.
That makes sense.
They also added a cool system where you can store your guns now. There's like a gun storage, so you don't have to sell it off if you like run out of room in your briefcase. Mm-hmm. It's just a different experience though. Yeah, they don't support kind of like the grinding to upgrade everything unless you do like subsequent playthroughs. But
that's really too bad.
I think it is like a stylistic choice where it's like, I mean, similar to like Knights of the Old Republic in my mind, where it's like, because the positive of it is I think it's a very well-balanced experience where it's like, you know, I kind of see it like Slay the Spire, where it's like, if you're really smart and you upgrade only the stuff you need to, then you can like competently play through the entire game. But there is danger where it's like, if you fall behind on upgrades and your guns are less efficient, and then you're using more ammunition, and then it's like harder to upgrade. So like,
see, that's,
I don't know.
That's way too much like real life. Like, I don't play games to be in debt.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was able to stay on top of it, so I didn't feel like the burn of it. But yeah, I suppose it could be harsher if, I don't know. Yeah, if you had a harder time with it.
Nice.
Just upgrade the Red 9, dude. That's all you need to do. Get the Red 9 and upgrade it all the way. That's all you need to care about.
I think I'm going with the Punisher this time, honestly. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's the exclusive gun, right?
I don't know if it's exclusive. Is it?
I think you have to buy it through Spinels, right?
Yes, yeah, but that's the one that has the penetration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So previous game, I just did whatever was your starting gun, because you could get up to like 100 rounds or something.
Yeah, you could make it ridiculous, and if you fully upgraded it, yeah, that was pretty viable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything else that I would ask Ben would just be asking you to spoil things that I'm going to see eventually. So I'm not going to, you know, probe you about what may or may not be in the game vis-a-vis a mechanical Saddler, or not Saddler, Salazar.
Hey, spoilers.
I mean, it's in the original.
I will not spoil anything.
But is it in the remake?
Like I said, I don't want to know.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, man. Did you have anything else? Oh, go ahead.
I'll say in broad strokes, I think they try and make the game more grounded, maybe, and like a little less goofy in certain places, maybe. I mean, there's still plenty of goof, but it's like they picked like half the campy jokes and they took them out, and then they left the other half in, and it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. But
nice. Anything else about that one?
No, I think that's all for Resident Evil. I'm impressed with it. I'm excited to hear what you think of it after you're done with it.
Yeah. That's all that I had. I've not played anything else meaningfully to where I can add more on it. So, you have anything else, Ben, or have you just been?
You
do.
Wow. I have a lot. I won't talk about these in detail, but I will say that there was a Steam Spring Sale like 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
So I went through and got a bunch off my backlog, like basically anything that was under $10, and that was like pretty decently discounted. Mm-hmm. I picked up, played for an hour. The stuff I didn't like, I returned, and then the stuff I liked, I kept. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't like, so but I'm happy about that because it's like getting rid of this backlog that I have, where it's like, oh, maybe it's a cool game, maybe not. The one shout out I'll give is there's a puzzle game called Altered that I kept. It's a relatively small puzzle game. It should be like under $10, I think. And it's like a Sokoban type game, and it's a lot of it's just like dealing with like how you can move around this like map in a certain way. The art style's kind of cool. Think of it in a scale of like Pipe Push Paradise, where it's just like a small, simple, neat puzzle game.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed by that. And I think on sale it was like $2 or $3. So that was like well worth the price. Mm-hmm. So shout out for that. But then I'm gonna move on and talk about other stuff. So the big news is I got a PSVR 2 over the last 2 shit. Weeks. Oh, yeah. Cool. Finally pulled the trigger on that. I've tried like 3 or 4 games out on it. I would
it
say
has it's 3 or 4 games?
Yeah. So I've only bought the one game, which was the Horizon Zero Dawn. The rest of it has been either demos or upgrades that I got for free for games that I already owned. So I guess I'll go from least to best. I don't know. I got an upgrade for No Man's Sky, and I got an upgrade for Resident Evil Village for free. So I tried to put those out. Resident Evil Village has continuous movement, so that's like vomit inducing. So I played like 5 minutes of that, and it's really weird. It's they tried to do cool stuff with the combat. I didn't even get. I got to the part where you see the church and stuff like that, but that's it.
Okay.
They do goofy stuff where your hands are like, they kind of like retcon the VR for it. So like there's times where your hands are moving at odd angles that do not match up with where your hands are. That doesn't feel good at all. There's times where you're crawling on the ground but you are standing up in real life and doesn't feel good at all. So I don't know, whatever, but this is kind of teaching you that like what good VR is and what bad VR is. No Man's Sky is better. They have a warp system where it's like, I want to go this way, and I'll like ping like 100 feet from where I am of where I want to go, and it'll warp you there. So that was a little bit more forgiving. I played through the tutorial and got to the part where you get in your spaceship and you can take off off planet, because that's what I wanted to experience in VR. It's kind of cool. You have like a joystick control for the flight, and that's like a little bit unintuitive. But I tried that. It was kind of cool. And then I just kind of gave up on that because I kind of wanted to explore different things. I played the Star Wars demo, which is like on the Galaxy's Edge. That felt a lot better. That had warp movement and you're just shooting a gun a lot and like with like blasters and stuff. But that felt really good. The one that I've spent the most time with is the Horizon Zero Dawn game. So that's kind of like the launch title with the PSVR 2. Basically, it's set in the world of Horizon Zero Dawn, but basically all you're doing is you are a climber slash really good bowsman, and you are climbing to the top of a mountain, and you're shooting things with your bow. And that's like, there's a little bit more intricacies than that, like they give you a little bit more tools and verbs that you can do within that, but that's the main meat and potatoes of the game, is you do these nice climbing sections, and you do bow sections. So like when I heard a review of this, people were saying that it was very like vomit inducing, that sort of thing. So I was a little bit worried about that, but it is completely smooth for me. It's like I haven't felt that way at all. Like I haven't gotten nauseous to the point where I need to like stop playing. It's more like I'll play for an hour and then I'm like, I just want to take a break after that, like in general, because it feels weird being in a headset for that long. But Yeah, but this game is like beautiful, and the climbing around, like climbing a mountain and like climbing cords, like as you're like dangling above something, you know, and looking around, is a really cool experience. So that's definitely been the most that's been the best experience that I've had so far, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the one that is, I mean, that's the killer app. Like, that was designed specifically to show off PSVR 2. And it's combining two really well-trodden, because that sounds like I'm dinging it. Like, the climbing game and the bow and arrow game are, you know, kind of standbys for VR. And, you know, putting them together in that, in that setting just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And one thing that's kind of interesting too is they have there's parts where you do continuous movement. They do a couple things to mitigate it. One is like when you start moving, they'll narrow the scope of what you're looking at. So it's like the circle will close in so that you're just looking kind of like farther off in the distance. You don't see as much in the periphery. And then the other thing is the controls for it, at least one of the options for the controls, is you move your hands back and forth as if you're walking.
You're just kind of swimming in the air.
Yeah, and for some reason that does like trick your body a little bit to like not notice it as much, because you're like, I'm just walking in place. This is normal. So that's kind of goofy. The tech side of this, I'll say a few things. So this is something, it's hard. I can't notice it because I'm playing it in first person or whatever. But with Horizon Zero Dawn, they do things where they track your eye movement in the helmet. And you can do this to calibrate at the beginning, too. Like, so when you have the headset, there's a calibration you can do where it'll look at where your eyes are to make sure that they're centered. So like, that's a nice like tool to have, just to make sure when you put the helmet on that it's all set up correctly and everything. They have a dial that moves like the lenses apart, like laterally, like to the right or left or whatever. And so you can adjust that to make sure that it's like centered so that you have a good viewing experience. And then one of the cool parts of it is there's a button on the front that's kind of your lifeline, where you can press it at any time and it turns to a pass through. Yeah. So there's cameras on the front of the visor and it'll turn those on. So you're, without taking off the helmet, you're like seeing what's in your room, and it's just like a black and white camera of it.
Yeah. I call that, oh God, where's the cat?
But it's really sick. Like when you set up, you can set up like a play environment when you have this. And I don't know if other VRs have this or not, but it's like you basically map out the area that you're playing in, and that'll set up a grid. And so then if you go outside of that grid, it'll let you know.
Or even like get close to it. Oculus has that as well. Okay. Right. They call it Guardian or something like that. But like you trace a box, like you trace a line on the floor around, you know, where is safe.
Yeah. Not their box.
And so with this one, you just need to look around and it'll like map out the environment. And then one thing that's interesting too is there's like stuff that they'll do with like a little bit of AR, where it's like if you have a controller in your hand, it'll show things like around your hand as it's moving around, like similar to like, I guess how the screen is like kind of floating in air as you're looking at it.
So what they need to do with AR and that pass through view is like one out of every 100 times you go to pass through, there's like a monster standing right in front of you.
Jesus Christ. I don't know. The tech is really impressive. There's definitely cool experiences you can get out of it. I would not hard recommend this or anything. I think this is more of like a luxury item sort of thing, where it's like, if you're interested in that sort of thing and you have disposable income, go for it. But it's like, it's not on the same level as getting like a PS5, for example.
There's a lot of people already not enthused about getting a PS5. So
no. I guess I should rephrase it. Like, it's not on the same order of getting like a next generation console as far as like what it opens up for, like what you can play, like that sort of thing. But I'm interested to see where it goes and like what other games that they have. There's a couple other games I want to try after I'm done with Horizon Zero Dawn. So I'll probably talk about those in the coming weeks, but it's been a really cool, interesting piece of tech so far. So I'm excited to show it off to friends when they come over. So yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, welcome to the VR family.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Let's see, David, how about you?
Hey, I've not had a whole ton of stuff. I've been continuing on with Wolong I beat the first three levels, if that tells people anything.
You got past the second boss, which I understand is very difficult.
Yeah, it. I would actually say I think the first boss is by far the most difficult, assuming you don't cheese it.
Mm-hmm.
The boss of the third level or third area isn't particularly difficult. He is very, very annoying because he's almost all range attacks and has a teleport ability. Mm. So you spend the vast majority of the fight just chasing him around the level.
Ugh. Have so you gotten to the point where the game opens up?
I have not. So I have one more level to go. And that's actually what I was going to say is I think my biggest complaint with this game, and I don't know why they did it, is why it takes so incredibly long to open up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've complained before about, like, you know, some of the From games, you know, where you have to go, you know, beat the first boss before you can level, that sort of thing, but I've seen nothing like this.
Yeah. Hmm.
How many hours have you played it so far?
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the actual thing. I've been playing it in a lot of short bursts, so it's that makes it hard for me to estimate the number of hours.
Gotcha.
Overall, I'd say it's a very pretty game, and you know, it's kind of neat seeing a different setting for a From game. I don't think it's nearly as good. For a Souls game.
Yeah.
I don't think it's nearly as good as any of the From games or Neo or anything like that.
Mm.
I think a lot of it is its parry mechanic kind of is not just an important mechanic, but is kind of the only mechanic.
Okay.
So, you know, the combat's not really fun because the best strategy is basically always to just stand there and wait for enemies to attack and then counter them.
Okay.
So, and just, you know, it does the Neo thing where every weapon is associated with a different stat. And so it doesn't feel like you really can, you know, have builds in the same way, or likewise, all the weapons feel pretty samey. And I think some of that's because you're not really using them for their attack combos. Basically, the only time I'm attacking is when my opponent can't possibly hit me. And so I don't really care about what the you know, combos are, how fast the weapon is, or how long its reach is, because, you know, I'm only using them in the situations where I've just parried, and so my, you know, opponent is stunned.
Hmm.
So yeah, I don't know, mixed feelings. Like, there's definitely some cool things it does, but overall I'm finding the gameplay kind of disappointing.
That's a shame.
So, that's honestly most of what I have on that. The only other thing I've been playing is, was it? Sorry, we're open.
Oh yeah. I forget if I talked about that on here. Yeah. The horror supermarket management RPG.
Yeah. Yeah, with some random RPG thrown in for good measure.
In turn-based battles against shopping carts, where you use managerial tactics and your staff dies a lot.
So that was actually one of the things I was going to add. Have you beaten the game?
No, not yet.
Okay. How many staff have you had die?
I think like 7 or 9. Something.
Oh, wow.
Like
okay.
Yeah.
is this a good thing or a bad thing in the context of the game?
I'm trying to figure it out. I'm going to leave that to David because he said, oh, wow. I don't know if that's an oh, wow, that's a lot, or oh, wow, you're doing good.
I've had,
I'll take the over.
I've had 3 staff die, and I fired one of them.
Okay.
As in putting an incinerator?
Yeah, you know. No, you can only have 3 people on your team, and you know, you get every so often you get someone who's just strictly better.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a different drawback. I haven't talked about this. I did stream it though, the weekend before last. Mm-hmm. Is what it was. Sorry, I went and looked. Yeah, no. And sometimes you get like, I don't see a reason to have a supervisor because their abilities are pretty much exactly what my abilities are as the manager. So,
yeah, I think it's interesting. One of the interesting things about this game is it is technically an RPG maker game.
Yes. It's very much, when you play it, like it feels very much like RPG maker in the mode of like an Earthbound style thing.
Right, right. But, you know, with it being in the kind of the Earthbound style, there is a significant number of things where they've tweaked. So like there's no random encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And the combat, all of your abilities pretty much cost money.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the weird, like, kind of, I don't know, macro MP mechanic. And then likewise, it's fairly small number RPG.
Yes.
And with very... very important, but very, I guess you could kind of say, chunky status effects.
Yes.
So it's really interesting. I would almost compare it to the gameplay, almost feels more like a combat system I might expect from like a board game or something.
It feels very board gamey. So you're like, to call it like supermarket management, you're not really doing any kind of management. Your character is the manager of this department store, supermarket, Walmart kind of thing that is very much haunted. Bad stuff is happening. This whole chain, weird things are going on. And you can explore during the off time, but when you decide to start a shift, it runs basically like every hour there's a random event where you make a little choice. So it's kind of like it shuffles a little deck of encounters, and then you draw, and then the outcomes are determined by luck or, whether or not you have the resources to, get by. And one of the consequences for failure on those is it starts a battle kind of deal. It feels very tabletop-y.
Yeah. And when you're doing the shifts, it's almost a, what is that game? Like the Yarg or whatever type of thing where it's, it's very much present a situation, give you an option of how you want to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, that determines, what happens.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like a lot. Thank you. Like a lot of the gameplay, at least depending on, how much you want to conserve your staff, is built around managing that. So, for example, one of the things you can get is you'll have, say, the options between, clean up a mess or, I don't know, go check the inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And cleaning up a mess, uses up, say, one of your mops, which is, an item you have to buy.
It has to be a wet mess or a dry mess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, that that option will never have combat.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the inventory, going and checking the inventory, you might get a free item or you might get attacked.
Yes.
So it kind of gets to a thing where, as you learn what some of the options do, you can sort of tweak your luck.
Mm-hmm. You're trading one resource for another. So your mop costs $5 or $10 or whatever it is, and you expend that, and you know, you might not have it for later, but right now you can sacrifice that in order to not risk getting into a combat encounter where you will spend, you know, tens of dollars using the attacks that you need in order to deal with whatever comes and attacks you, you know. Similarly, like in the encounters themselves, the only free quote unquote move is goof off. You can just, you know, goof off, and that causes damage to the enemies. I don't know what they're doing, horseplay or whatever. that is at the expense of your manager. So your character, the only character who, if they die, you know, there's a consequence. You have to restart the day or go back to the break room or whatever. You take damage. So you're making, you know, kind of educated choices. You know, is it worth sinking that 3 HP damage on my guy, you know, in order to not spend the $10 here to do this particular attack?
One of the interesting things I've noticed is how watching your stream is how different our combat strategies are.
Okay.
Because my strategy, you know, well, I noticed like you basically sell or throw away, quote unquote, all of the trash you find,
mm-hmm.
which is probably the intended way to play the game.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, like, trash is the most useful item I have because my strategy is entirely trigger regeneration effect on my manager. Have my team you can use your round to basically open up trash and either like deal a trivial amount of damage, heal, or get a trivial amount of money. And basically allows you to stall combat. So you can just have your manager regenerate and then goof off to kill all the enemies.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I don't think either of these are necessarily the right thing. It's just interesting, you know, when after I started playing and, you know, watch your next stream, realizing that you're playing completely opposite to how I was.
Yeah, and I think both strategies are defensible. I have no idea which one is optimal, but I think this is the benefit that you get out of a small numbers RPG.
Exactly.
is that like each of these little meters is very concretely and very understandably linked to each other, right? Like your resources all have a correlation. You roughly know, you know, where risk is associated and where certainty is associated, and you can make those trade-offs accordingly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the other big things is you can find union cards from previous failed unionization attempts.
Yep.
And each card has basically...
It's like a bounty system.
Well, no. Yeah. So each card basically has what the union was trying to win. And it's, you know, it's something for, you know, that they want management to do. And you then get that as a skill.
Yeah. So there are high monetary cost abilities that are very effective. So like your best healing is time off, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you use that on somebody, it recovers a ton of HP, but it also puts them in hiding. So it kind of takes them off the board, so they're not going to take a hit in the next round until they move again.
Exactly. So, and those are, one, just like narratively really interesting, also super important. That's how I found once I got a couple of those, I actually didn't have anyone die after that.
Mm-hmm. Based.
And a lot of it was also like once I realized that, it then became like I went out of my way to do that just to see if I could type mm-hmm. of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's you know, really interesting, kind of a fun thing. And I love a lot of your coworkers' abilities are their theming for them is a little subversive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of thing where like the stock, stock the shelves ability.
Mm-hmm.
Basically makes your makes a character get the hidden status effect, because it's presented as like they're going to, you know, go back and, you know, work on the stock in the back to actually just slack off and like not have to deal with customers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, or like for the janitor class, so there's a bunch of different classes for the different folks you can recruit. The janitor class has a I forget what it's called. It's like janitor's glare, or I think it's called I just mopped there, or mm-hmm. something like that, which marks it confers the marked status effect, which makes the target more susceptible to criticals. You know, yep. Like you give them the glare of death. You know, so they know they know they're on notice. Yeah.
So the other thing I found,
he doesn't just have aggro; he has passive aggro,
the best type of aggro. The other thing, just from like an approach to gameplay, I found kind of funny is you can complete almost all of the game without actually working hardly any of the nights.
Yeah.
I think you technically only have to work like 3 of the departments to the end to get like every ending. Granted, like you should do all of them. I did all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting. I almost want to try speedrunning the game, just because the way it's set up, it's a game that you can very much, once you've played it before, you realize that a lot of the stuff you were doing was actually optional.
Yeah. Just because it seemed like the way, you know, the way through, like you are also trying to open up more of your facility, mm-hmm. by, you know, getting the resources to buy mops and brooms. And then like the big, you know, kind of Zelda keys that you get are industrial cleaners that will unblock, you know, the way back into the deep storage where all the people who die are turned into mannequins and kept.
Yep.
You know, let's not forget this is a, you know, spooky game, more atmospheric than a lot of things, but there is there's a definite spookums vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah. How far have you gotten? Like,
I've started going to the other locations. Mm-hmm. To get their stock. Like I think I did the electronics. I've got the food, or like the produce, kind of stuff. I forget where I've got, but I've only got a couple more other locations to go to.
Nice. Yeah, I like you. So you've met like the Jay and Silent Bob characters.
I think so. The last one that I went to had the guy in the car with the anger problem listening to the listening to the motivational tapes.
Oh yeah, that is super dark.
hey, what's the secret? I mean, there was nothing there. Oh no. Oh no.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, unfortunately, pretty much anything else I could say would kind of spoil, but yeah, it's a really good game. It gets very, very meta as it goes on.
Oh yeah.
Which is a lot of fun. But yeah, how does this compare to like indie horror games?
This is a little bit lighter, you know. Mm-hmm. It's more focused on being weird than being real, you know, spooky, unsettling, let's say. Mm-hmm. There are, indie horror games that are, you know, like in the RPG Maker, kind of mold, you know? So I would call this like, it's a bit on the softer side, but, you know, and a bit more, you know, inventive than some of them tend to be.
Sure.
But like it is mechanically interesting as an RPG, which is not what I expected when I fired it up.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And fairly puzzle based.
Mm-hmm.
Almost in a lot of ways feels like an old adventure game.
Yeah.
Not as much of the weird, like, you know, tape the cat to the, you know, fan in order to mow the garden or something.
Right, right.
But, you know, still.
Mm-hmm. That's stuff that fits the theme, fits the setting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a super neat little game for people who didn't catch the title. It's called Sorry, We're Open. I'm really happy that I took the plunge, and I'm happy that the stream, you know, inspired you to pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually, probably going to look into, trying to find some more, you know, kind of games in some of that speed.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it's also like, doesn't require like 80 hours to play.
Yeah. it is a short RPG as well. I think it's, you know, it's sub 10 hours, which is,
yeah, yeah,
you know, which is a, you know, not a lot of game, a lot of RPGs are comfortable being at that length.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's all I had this week.
Cool. Dennis, round us out.
I shall round us out. I have a new game and then an old game on a new system to talk about.
Okay.
So you guys tell me what you want first.
Old game, new system first.
Yeah, old game, new system, and finish us out with a new one. I can see on the list what the new game is.
So. A surprise. Don't ruin it for everyone listening. I'm on the edge of their seat.
I'm not going to ruin it.
So the old game, new system is Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, which I've been slowly playing through with friends and was playing on PS4. But earlier this week, my PS4's disc reader stopped working.
Oh, no.
And that is, I realized, the only game that I still play that I have on a disc.
Mm.
So I was like, crap. Like, you know, I was kind of the dumpy, slow one of the group because I think everyone else was either on like 360 or PS5 or whatever. Or not 360. Yeah, whatever.
I was gonna say, wow.
Oh, my God. I time traveled. What year is it?
I don't know what you're trying to imply.
They would all load in and then we would just kind of chat for a while we waited for me to jump in.
So, oh, you don't want to be that person. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went over and I bought it on Steam and am very happy with the upgrade, except for the fact that, my character did not transfer over.
Oh no.
Yeah. I had high hopes, because it like you have to log in a Shift account or whatever it is, like Gearbox's Connect them all launcher, aspirational, whatever thing. Yeah. So I had to, you know, register with that to start playing on PS4. And other than just turning over my data to another company, I would have hoped that would have allowed me to have, you know, cross save and progress. But nope, no such luck. You could, if you upgraded to PS5, you could transfer your save that way. And if you wanted to transfer from Epic Game Store to Steam, which I don't know who's doing that, you could do that. But otherwise, no, SOL. So
good God.
I told my buddies, I was like, all right, I'll stay, like we were on Discord. I'll stay in Discord and chat with you guys. I'm just going to start a new run and I'll kind of critical path it to catch up with you guys.
Okay.
So I've been hardlining or mainlining, the game to catch up for the next time we play. Which has really allowed me to like marinate in how amazing this game is, just from a pure entertainment and enjoyment standpoint. Wonderlands has to be the most dense with just like funny shit that I've ever played. It's amazing. Just like literally laughing out loud at multiple points as I play through. It's so well done. You can tell there's so much love both for, you know, video games and for tabletop gaming, embedded in this. Like I can't believe that this isn't, more of a, like, I don't know, notable game. It just feels like, yes, this should define the Borderlands series instead of being an offshoot. Like this.
Oh,
feels
so
like
it's
the
Saints Row the third of this series.
It is absolutely. that is on it. Yeah. For a series that was already kind of like Saints Row the third levels of silly. This is, yeah, the defining entry, in my mind, at least. But yeah, it looks gorgeous, plays well on PC. I had no small amount of joy cranking up the settings since I've splurged on a new machine. The presets go from like, you know, low, medium, high, ultra, and then of course badass is the highest setting.
Okay.
So that's been fun. But yeah, it's been really cool. And I'm hearing all these jokes for the second time, you know, like I know what's coming and it's still funny. And I'm picking up on so many little things that I missed the first time through, in part because I'm trying, like, you know, because you have to level a little bit with side quests to just keep up. You can't purely Critical Path Johnny it. So I've just chosen different side quests that we had not done yet. So I'm seeing a little bit of new content, but also just like the same content has new nuances to it. Which, you know, I'm playing solo. I'm not like jabbering with friends over all the dialogue. So I'm probably getting more that way.
Yeah.
But just one standout section. So you go to the Tanglewood forest, or I forget exactly what it's called. But it's a giant beanstalk that had sprouted fairy tale style, but taken the entire village with it up into the sky.
Okay.
But at the same time, this like fungus, these spores have like formed, you know, parasitically formed on it, and you're there to like clear out the spores up in this giant beanstalk tower in the sky. And so, you know, you go through the whole level. There's jokes left and right through it, but you get to the end, and you slide down the beanstalk to get to where you started, right? And there's just this little moment where you pass under a house and there's a camera, like a lantern hanging. It does like the click, 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 click thing, mocking the roller coaster cameras.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's such a small thing, but I know exactly what they're doing. It's never referenced again.
Do they try and sell it to you?
Well, funny you should mention that. Not quite, but when you get to the bottom, it's the area that all your loot is. And it's at the Lots of Loot bar. Which is not just where you pick up your loot, but it is also a trio of lootists jamming on the side. So I appreciated that. The character that you're working with, the fairy punch father, who's played by Brick from the first game, then spouts the line that this entire quest has been building up to. He goes, "Remember, only you can stop Spore Spires."
Oh, geez.
And I was like, all right, you got me.
So there we go.
Is this game made just exclusively by dads?
It's made for him and by him, I'm gonna guess.
BD4D.
So, you know, the quest reward is a sniper rifle that shoots cannonballs. Amazing. And I'm checking it out and just like scope in on something off in the distance, right? Like it was kind of like no reason that I would be looking over there other than just like, ooh, I wonder what it looks like when it's zoomed in. And I notice that one of the magic missiles from earlier in the game, and I can't remember if I covered this, there's a point at which you need to cross an ocean, and you get Mr. Torg as your bard to do this.
Yes.
Instead of anything else, Mr. Torg, famous for his affinity for explosions, blows up the ocean. Literally just fires a bunch of magic missiles,
okay,
which are literal like missiles coming out of a silo and blows up the ocean so you can walk through. Anyway, one of those missiles is like tangled in the vines and just like hanging out up there in a place you would never see it, except I randomly stumbled across it. And then finally I realized that I'm hearing there's like this weird like meep, 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 like sound going on. And I'm like, what is that? And I look around and like, there are these like magic portals that you've been using, throughout your ascent. And there's a sheep that's stuck in two portals above, you know, one below the other and just falling eternally through.
Oh, geez.
And it's like, oh my, like so much love and glee packed into every corner of this game. I'm having a blast playing through it solo. I did not think to shoot the sheep.
Then it would be going at terminal velocity.
That's true. Yeah. There's a one liner in there somewhere. I did stop playing in that area so I can go back. And, when I reload back up and check it out, but yeah, so Wonderlands is delightful. And I highly recommend it.
Do you find yourself trying a different build? I mean, this is an action RPG.
No, because I felt an obligation to, like, you know, when I rejoin with the group, I want to fill my same role.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Although I, so there's, you know, there's, I'm to the point now I can multi-class. And one of the things I had never noticed before is that when you multi-class, it, like, gives you a new class title that's like some play on the two classes combined. So my primary class is Graveborn, which is like an emo vampire kind of deal. You can sacrifice health to then make big explosions. And then the secondary class that I chose was the Spore Warden, which is like a nature-y druidic guy. His companion is a mushroom, like a giant walking mushroom kind of deal. And the portmanteau, or the combination of those two classes, was the Morticulturist.
Oh, God.
It's just so good. But anyway, so I wanted to continue down that path just because I know I'll show back up. Hopefully for my main group, it feels like, you know, it didn't have to break stride.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. I highly recommend that game.
How does, so are you playing as a specific character the same way you were in previous games?
It's odd. This is another thing that I caught my second time through. So in the intro, it's shown that you are hiding in a bunker with Tina and then two other characters that I don't think have been in other games, but it's like Valentine and Fret. And you're like hiding in this bunker with them, and Tina is leading you through a game of, they call it Bunkers and Badasses. And so when you do your character creation, and it's all kind of in that frame of reference. And then Tiny Tina looks at your character sheets and she's like, okay, what the hell, Valentine, you just drew pictures all over yours. Like, we can't use this. And Fret, you wrote that your starting sword does murder 1,000 damage. Like, what is going on here? And so she's like, all right, look, you're going to be the one to play and they'll act as advisors.
Mm.
And so it's this really, so, you know, you, as you're playing through the quest, you have all the in-world characters that you're interacting with. But then you have Tiny Tina and these two people that are just kind of there hanging out doing color commentary and jokes and stuff. But it also, like, impacts the plot. And that's kind of the story, is that, like, the big bad is kind of like spiraling out of Tiny Tina's control in some interesting ways. And so the whole line between, you know, the in-game reality and then the reality is getting blurred. Which is again, very, very intriguing and also played for lots of laughs.
No.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, that's Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. I also did dip into the Diablo 4 beta.
Oh.
They had open beta this weekend.
Oh my.
Yeah. I had a bunch of buddies that were playing and coerced me. And so I was like, all right, I'll jump in with you. And there's some stuff to like here, so I'll cover that. I think the skill tree, so I chose the new class, the Druid, to play as.
Mm-hmm.
And the skill tree, I can speak to that class specifically. I imagine it's the same for the others, is really well done. Like, as I remember it in Diablo 3, once you chose your class, you kind of had your progression of skills and that was it. Whereas now when you choose your class in Diablo 4, you get a starting node and there's four different skills that are like different, you know, builds for the class that you can choose from. And every point you put in on that series of nodes advances you towards the second node, or that, you know, that those skills within that node, it advances you towards the second node. And then that opens up another set of skills, again, all kind of in these different builds. And so there's a lot more like freeform choice and variance within each class in the way that they structure it for Diablo 4. And like I said, I don't remember that from Diablo 3. I don't know if any of you can confirm or deny if
other Diablos have been like that. To, yeah, okay.
Money Smith, were you the Diablo?
So the previous Diablo games, Diablo 2 definitely had like a full-on skill tree.
Okay.
So, like, the druid in that, you could either be a summoner, a elementalist, or a shapeshifter.
Okay. Okay, yeah. So maybe this is a return to the roots in DM3, Diablo 3 was streamlined, or maybe I'm just remembering 3 wrong.
Yeah,
I
prefer being very the term linear. Dumbed down, but
yeah. So that's cool. The pacing of the game is good. You know, like the world feels big, but not to the point that you're like, there's not a ton of dead space in it, if you will. So it was fun to mash through. And this is like, you know, this is a Diablo-ass Diablo game, right? Like, you know, button mash and kill lots of enemies with your friends. That's a good time. However, there is just this, I don't know, throughout it, there was this weird feeling of something being off, specifically in that, like, there seemed to be this like ever-present lag between my button presses and what was happening on screen. And as I was talking about this with friends, someone said, oh yeah, that's the remaster of 2 was like that because they added this always on connection.
Mm. Oh, yep.
And so I think there's like, it sounded like this, it suffers from the same problem that in the name of always on connectivity, there is just this always lag that you have to deal with.
So you're saying that capitalism is the problem after all?
Yep.
Always has been. Well, okay.
Right on.
Memes.
And so like, I don't think I would have noticed it so much, when I was using my basic attack, except the way the druid, that I was playing worked, and I went the werebear path on the skill tree. So, you know, transform to a big bear and slam the ground and all that stuff. But I had an AoE attack that your basic attacks charge up energy, and then this AoE attack spent it. And I would, you know, I would hit the button to do the AoE attack. But you know, nothing would happen, or at least nothing would happen immediately on screen. And since it's a button mashing kind of game, I'm just like tapping square until I get the result I want. Right.
Yeah.
Except that would queue up a ton of attacks, and then I'm stuck doing an AoE attack on empty air. Like wondering what happened, while it spends all the energy that I had built up. And so, yeah, it's almost like, I have a hard time believing that this is intent. I guess you could argue that it's like, oh, well, you know, they want you to be a little more thoughtful with your button presses or something like that. But like, this is not what that game is about. This is blank mind, button mashy.
I didn't come here to think.
Yeah,
I did not come here to think. I came here to lead, not to read.
What do you think this is, school?
Yeah, that sounds pretty damning, actually.
It really, like, Not that anything was so difficult that it like screwed me over, but in terms of the idea of I'm managing this energy resource, it felt wrong. Yeah. It felt off. And you know, the game always seemed slightly confused about where I was and where everyone else was on the screen. Again, nothing that was like horrible teleporting, but it just like, I don't know, you couldn't forget once you knew that you were connected to a server that was okaying everything that you did.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I kind of, you know, I played it a bit. I fell away before reaching, I think it was like, if you hit level 20, you got something special. And I was just like, this isn't worth it. I hope that's ironed out by the time it releases for real. Especially like if you're going to pay to play this game, I don't think the current state was felt finished enough for that.
Yeah. That's a beta.
We'll see. Yeah, you know, hopefully they iron it out, people can loot like crazy without the lag.
How did the addition of the dodge button feel to you?
Oh, yeah, because now it is a limited resource, right?
I don't think there was dodging at all before.
There was in Diablo 3, I thought. Man, this is showing just how murky my memory of the main Diablo game I played was.
Other places that I've heard it talked about have mentioned it like it is new.
Okay. I want to say it was an addition when Diablo 3 went to consoles or something like that. Okay.
What was? I'm sorry.
Dodging?
The dodge roll.
Yeah, that was added with consoles to make up for their horrible inputs.
Right. Yes. And that's, again, I wouldn't know because I've only ever played with a controller. But I've heard other people saying like this feels like a Diablo built from the ground up for controller instead of mouse and keyboard.
Right. Which you're really not selling this.
Depending on what you prefer, that could be very damning or very encouraging. So we shall see. But yeah, it definitely feels made for a controller. And you do have a dodge roll. It's mapped to circle, on a PlayStation keypad. So one of your main inputs. And apart from bossing, it doesn't feel super relevant. I did use it to just like close distance with enemies, but I never really used it to get out of the way, except when I was in a boss fight. So on the one hand, it's nice to have a little dash effectively.
Yeah.
To get into combat if I'm playing the big tanky melee character, right? But on the other hand, it then goes on like a 4 or 5 second cooldown. And I don't know if you can upgrade that or what have you. I imagine it's somewhere on the skill tree. But the amount of times you hit the button and roll is not quite back up is pretty high. And you get a little voice stinger every time. I'm not ready to do that.
Ugh.
It's like, so please stop saying that. Please. Maybe the first time, but yeah, I don't.
Oh yeah, that's a long running feature of the Diablo series is repetitive barks.
Yes, they have nailed that.
I'm not ready.
Drop a beat and you've got the next techno sensation. But yeah, so I had fun with my time with it, and I hope they iron out kind of the connectivity stuff. And like, if you're not going to get rid of it, at least don't make it intrusive. At least don't make me constantly aware of it. And I don't know. I didn't leave feeling like, oh boy, I need to play this when it comes out. But especially given the state that the third Diablo launched and it'll be a giant wait and see for me.
Yeah.
But that's Diablo 4.
Nice. Well, that sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, we're gonna get stylish here. So you know those bonus filters that games have that, like, you know, put everything in sepia tones or in black and white. Imagine those can now transform the entire visual aesthetic of the game instead of just the color palette. What is the first game and filter combination that you would want to try?
Before we get started, we need to have an intervention. Like, hey, David and Ben, we really need to decide if we're keeping Dennis on, if he's going to put pack scrout
here.
No.
The image that Dennis chose when he posted this, we've got like a pixel art Kratos, which is fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's identifiably Kratos. We have kind of a very cute kind of chibi. I believe that's like a Dark Souls 1, like Elite Knight, or no, that's a Demon Souls. Yeah. It's a Demon Souls Elite Knight. That's Dark Souls. Cause he has Estus. Thought it was Demon Souls. Cause it's a crystal lizard anyway. Cute there. But the last one
I'm just gonna agree with whatever conclusion you make
is a photorealistic Pac-Man. And by photorealistic, I mean it is made of
photorealistic.
Yeah. It looks like a scrotum. One ball of a scrotum. It's real scrotum like.
Plus, yeah. If you went but scrotum plus Simpsons. Lemon.
Yeah.
Lemon scrotum. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Ultimate Showdown. Yeah. There you go. Oh, yeah.
I just wanted a hyper realistic Pac-Man. I work with the options that are given to me.
You know, sometimes you have to. If this is the answer you're going to get, you need to really start thinking about what questions you're asking, bud.
That's fair.
So I'm going to.
So I shouldn't share all of the variations on this that I got from a generative AI.
No, you really. You really shouldn't.
Yeah, I believe that's a degenerative AI.
Anyway, just wanted to call attention to that. It's real unpleasant.
I will take that under advisement.
Okay. Anyway, the first response here comes from Callum, who says the Horizon games with a watercolor painting filter.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Give it the, was it Akami treatment?
Yeah, yeah. Okami kind of has that. Yeah,
yeah. It's the ink wash.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Ink wash your eyes would be fun. Those.
That would be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no notes. It's a good suggestion. Ben, what does Daniel say?
Daniel says, Legend of Zelda's Twilight Princess was cel shading. The aesthetic of that game was a bald-faced response to the backlash against Wind Waker's art style, but Wind Waker proved to be the more enduring game, while Twilight Princess's polygon-pushing realistic approach all but guaranteed it would fade over time. Say yes to bold art direction.
I would say Twilight Princess's problems go deeper than the aesthetic, but I also agree. Wind Waker looks better. Yeah. Sorry, Ben.
I like Twilight Princess.
I know. That's why I said I'm sorry.
Yeah. Are you sorry?
It's okay to be wrong.
That I have that opinion?
No, I said a mean thing about a game that I know
you feel that way.
I said a mean thing about a game that I know you like. I don't feel any less the way that I feel, but...
Yeah. Look... I listened to the show you did about The Witness. If we can get past that, we can get past anything.
We're buddies. Look,
it happened in that weird period where, like, next gen meant that you had to push reality.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be as realistic as possible, even if that wasn't very realistic.
Yeah. No, just trying to compete with the Xbox 360 set.
See, I feel like... I could see that working for Zelda, but I think you'd have to go all the way. Like, you would have to do what if Zelda was Bloodborne.
Yeah, I thought it was an odd choice that every time you died, they had wasted across the screen.
David, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, Stardew Valley made into the Minecraft engine, or maybe the Dragon Quest Builder style.
Dragon Quest Builder style is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like someone's got to have done something like that. That seems like that would be such a good idea.
I was going to say the official, the big publisher farming games are 3D, but this isn't just 3D. This is 3D and that kind of stylized.
Yeah. Kind of the voxely, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm.
It's impossible to search for Stardew Valley 3D because it wants to show you Stardew Valley on the 3DS.
Makes sense. Let's see. And then Dennis, what does Peter say?
Peter says, ooh, so many choices. Without cheating and saying the remake of Bloodborne or the SNES Elden Ring mods that were made last year, I'd say give me an HD 2D remake of Rogue Galaxy, Final Fantasy VI, or the Game Boy Advance Fire Emblem games.
HD 2D Final Fantasy VI would be too powerful. That I think that would be too much for a lot of people and their hearts.
Mm. That's the one with steampunk mechs, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That one is great.
Yeah. It's the one that would be like best suited to that, I think.
Yeah. That was also the first one. What all Final Fantasy is.
I say that one was one of the early games that you guys covered on WoF.
Yeah, that was episode 11 and 12, I think, or 10 or 11. Yeah, no, 12. Yeah, 12 was Metroid Fusion. Sorry, I
nerd sniped him.
Yeah, sorry. You got me. You got me hit by a car. That's what nerd sniping is.
Yeah. Oh, you just have to run over people with a car? That's so much easier.
Yeah.
I don't have to be clever or know things.
I don't even need a sniper rifle.
No.
A ton of metal.
But you have what to is have a car a but a giant sniper rifle mounted on your car. It doesn't have to do anything, but it has to be there.
Why is your hood ornament a scope? Oh God. I do want to shout out Robert, who did not contribute an answer, but did comment on the Pac-Man picture.
Oh, no.
Saying, this guy is not my kind of guy.
No.
I think what makes it so much worse is that the mouth doesn't have any teeth.
You know what? Really. Yeah, it's real, so it's real flappy. It's
inverse Sonic?
Yeah.
it is the inverse Sonic problem.
Yeah, no. And the dead fish eyes, I think, as well.
Yeah, that's rough.
You know, I'm going to withhold judgment until you put a bow on it and see what Mrs. Pac-Man looks like.
Oh, what would the bow be made out of in this version?
It also has to have lipstick to be Mrs. Pac-Man.
True.
Dennis shut down mid-journey. Stop it. Stop it. I'm not going to be like Peter and take a big one off the table. I would like like Demon Souls maybe not PS1, but like early PS2 survival horror, you know, looking kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah, I think that that game's particular vibe would be real well suited to that particular level of visual fidelity.
Yeah, I'm actually really disappointed with the HD remake or whatever they did of Demon Souls. I feel like every enemy just looks less scary.
Hmm. I like it on the balance, but I can see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, I need to close this. photorealistic Pac-Man is scaring the hose. That's a meme. I don't use that word. Let's see. So yeah, that's me. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I think this is recency bias, but I would say either a Bloodborne version of Resident Evil 4 or a Resident Evil remake version of Dark Souls.
Hmm. Yeah. Resident Evil remake, like the current ones,
like the quality of the Resident Evil 4 remake, just apply that to Dark Souls.
Yeah. Hmm. We're probably getting there.
Yeah.
Did the Demon Souls re-release on PS5 have any of those notable changes? Like you said, conversation with the previous game moments. I think there was some stuff, right?
No. The mechanics were pretty, it was a very faithful, visual upgrade mostly.
I thought there was like an extra room people found or something like that. Maybe I'm wrong.
There was like an extra collectible kind of thing, like a secret hunt kind of deal that people got. Okay. But ultimately it was pretty minor. Yeah, that was like a community, like almost like verging on data mining kind of thing they put in for folks.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. How about you, David?
Man, initially I was going to say just any game with, you know, an Awoo filter, just, you know, out all cat boys and girls all the time.
Okay.
But no, I think what I'd have to go with is I don't know what feed the Google gods feed you guys, but at least for me, like every third YouTube video is like, what if Bloodborne was a 90s dark fantasy movie?
Okay.
And it's like all AI generated stuff.
All right.
It's the sort of, I'd say kind of ultra realistic type of thing where it looks like all of the shots were done, you know, on a, you know, in a studio with, you know, very harsh lighting, you know, kind of that sort of look.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be cool. Don't do it with AI. Actually pay artists, please.
Of course. Yeah.
But I could see like doing Bloodborne in, more of a, I don't know, a little bit more of the days when being an edgelord was fun.
Yeah. You just take Bloodborne and move it a little bit closer to Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So for me, I would want to play Deep Rock Galactic, except move away from the kind of like voxely style art, and move instead to more of like a Gears of War style.
Okay.
Like, let me fight those giant spiders in high def with a little extra grittiness on the side.
Do you still drink at a bar and dance with one another before you go out on the mission?
Yes. 100% yes.
And do you still slap die for good luck as you're going down to the planet?
Yes.
All right.
But it's gritty.
Hey, Dennis, you're real off the mic.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, but it's gritty.
Yes, but it's gritty.
Nice.
As a side note, I found the video I found. So if you want to check that out sometime, it's actually pretty fun.
Is it in the Slack?
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, thank you for asking the question, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you everybody for answering. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to Facebook and search for DuckFeed Community. And you'll see that at the top there, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Let us see. I don't know who to go first.
That means it's you. That means it's you.
That means it's me. This is more of a PSA than anything, which is for anybody who is not running Windows 10 or above, Steam is going to leave you behind. Valve have announced that sometime in the near future, they're going to stop supporting Windows 7, 8, and 8.1.
God damn it.
Yeah. I kind of was bringing that here for you. It ends on January the 1st of 2024, so you still have a little bit of time. But it might be time, Ben.
Do they support XP? Can we go backwards?
I mean, it won't be the newest version. I don't know if it will still connect to the servers.
Mm.
Yeah. So FYI for anybody who might be running an older system.
Sorry. FYI for anyone who hates change.
With this one.
Yeah, I'm ripping off the Band-Aid because I don't want you to try and open up your video games.
That's fair.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Womp womp.
It does. Yeah, this doesn't have to be a whole protracted thing. Dennis, what's going on over at Firaxis?
Yeah, not Jake Solomon anymore.
Yeah, this is weird.
This is kind of huge. So Jake Solomon is the creative director, or was the creative director at Firaxis for 23 years, I think. It's literally the only job he's ever had. Like, he graduated college in May 2000, got a job at Firaxis, and he's been there since, until now. So he is kind of widely known as the creative force behind XCOM and XCOM 2, which are obviously well-loved on this podcast.
Is he the bald guy?
No. Well, the picture I'm looking at, he has hair. So okay. Not sure if that... it does say Jake Solomon in 2013. Oh, no. Does Jake Solomon have hair? and if not, can we get AI imagery of Jake Solomon with hair?
I'd rather he didn't.
Or without.
Can you put hair on that Pac-Man?
Yeah. Oh no.
Sorry, I was joking. I meant the I guess the spokesman.
Oh, the commander.
No.
Sorry.
Or no, you're the commander. Who is the deep
according
guy.
To the wiki, he is the spokesman.
The spokesman. Okay. Mm. Yeah. Huh.
I assume that's him. Like
the embodiment of fatherly disappointment. That is, yes, the spokesman. No, Jake Solomon, you know, was a creative force behind the XCOM games as we know them. And he also led the creation of Midnight Suns.
No.
Which you know, was fairly well reviewed, and Ben, obviously you had plenty to say about that game.
Thumbs up it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
cutscenes were terrible, but you know.
Yeah, the dialogue was too much, but the game part of the game was really good, and that's, mm-hmm, that's credited to Solomon. But he is leaving. He is going to form his own studio. It does not yet have a name, and it does not yet have a game. But he is going to do something new. The most notable thing is that he has said he is not interested in doing another turn-based strategy game, which, you know, with the pedigree that we just listed is really his wheelhouse. So he's mused that he might do something in the life simulator genre.
Mm-hmm.
Which EA and Maxis are probably wetting their pants because The Sims 5 is already dealing with Life by You and Paralives. So I don't know what happened that everyone now needs to make that kind of game, but I would be interested to see Jake Solomon's crack at it.
I think after 23 years, people finally realized, oh shit, nobody ever made a competitor to this.
Wait a second.
I think it would be funny if he just made like a pool game based off of what he did in Midnight Suns.
yeah. So, you know, this is a designer that I quite like. I'm excited to see what he does next. It sounds like the departure from Firaxis was amicable. So yeah, excited to see what comes next for him.
Sweet.
Yeah. We will see. Let's see. Hey David, what kind of nonsense is happening with games and AI? I hate this.
Yeah, so a company called, it was NetDragon WebSoft, which that sounds like an AI-generated name.
I'm going to flush myself down the toilet head first.
Made a AI their CEO. and they don't exactly say what it does, but they kind of imply that they're literally letting an AI make business decisions.
And by AI, they mean a coin. They flip a coin.
Yeah, I mean, this really, you see the article saying, like, the biggest threat to jobs from AI is not, like, blue-collar jobs. It's the white-collar jobs. Yeah. It's the manager positions. So they're just ahead of their time on that.
Yeah, so their shares are up 10%, though, which apparently significantly beats the market. So,
but I mean, significantly beats the market. However, on announcing this, their stock plunged like 20%, 25%. And
which is weird because, like, I feel like if I was an evil investor, this is exactly what I would want. Is it's like the ultimate manifestation of a psychopathic CEO.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should have said they were making an NFT CEO. That would have gotten people excited.
No, that's if they did it in 2021 instead of 2022. Yeah.
Correct.
Huh. This is meaningless.
Yes. So is the position of CEO often.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, Jack Ma, has stated that a robot will likely be on the cover of Time magazine as the best CEO in 30 years.
Shrug.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see a robot CEO in Europe because they're like at least bound by law to do right by the company. So I want to see a robot get put in jail.
I think if you train like an AI trained on the actual law, may be more likely to hew to regulation than a human would, you know. Mm-hmm. So maybe
I think that's true.
Yeah. So this might backfire on them. Possibly. Maybe.
I think hopefully. Even a coin flip would be more ethical than a human as a CEO.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well. Yep. Good on them.
So just your reminder that we live in a cyberpunk story.
Yeah, but a really dumb one.
Yep.
Is there any other kind, really?
Rescue me, Ben.
Yeah, this will be maybe a follow-up for Dennis's. I'm going to talk about the Aliens game that was announced a couple weeks ago.
Confusingly called Dark Descent?
Yeah. I don't know. It's called Aliens Dark Descent, right?
Okay.
That's the subtitle.
So someone on Amnesia fucked up and didn't trademark, huh?
Maybe. Ooh. Yeah, that's why I say confusingly.
I got there. All right, my bad. Yeah. It's made by a French studio. What looked cool about it is it's a real-time strategy, but it looks like XCOM-esque where it's alien skin, so it's like you're a squad of space marines. You're going around like an area similar to XCOM, and you sometimes have to fight aliens. There's different alternate paths you can go through. The appearance looks a lot like XCOM as far as like you wandering through a map. It's just real time and not turn based, which could be a big deal. But
weren't the chrysalis or something from XCOM basically just xenomorphs?
Yeah, the chrysalids, very similar.
They were far more frightening to me, at least, because I was scared because of them as an adult.
Because of that one mission.
Yeah.
Oh, the harbor.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, no, I had not heard of this. So this is very cool.
Yeah. Looks pretty rad.
We'll see.
This is a good, I think the last, there was an Aliens, it was like an Aliens versus Predator, strategy game, like back on the PS2 or something like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, something.
I keep telling you, what we need, Aliens versus Predators versus RoboCop versus Terminator.
Kramer versus Kramer.
Kramer has had a crossover. All of those have had, are all technically part of the, I think, the Marvel Universe.
Mm. What?
They've cobbled them up now.
Yeah. Just everything. It's just a monoculture. I was so pissed off because I tweeted. No. I was going to tweet Kramer versus Predator.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that was that's funny. That's a very that's a very funny idea to me. And I was just like, I'm going to do a check because that sounds like something that would be on Family Guy. And then it absolutely was on Family Guy. So
even a broken clock.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, just because something's dumb and obvious doesn't stop me from saying it out loud.
Same with Family Guy.
yeah. But just, I hate it. It's preferable that I find out for myself and don't step in it, because if I do, if I do send it out, like, I will hear nothing but like corrections for the next week. But yeah, Dark Descent looks neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed.
Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 452. If you are in the Midwest or Milwaukee, as you're listening to this, there is still time to get out to the Midwest Gaming Classic. Gary and I will be there. We have some network folks who are going to be around. I think it's going to be a good time. We are guesting on Retronauts on Saturday at 4 on the in the panel room. We're having a meetup at Punch Bowl Social near the convention center on Saturday night, and then our panel about 7 out of 10 games. You know, what does it mean for a game to be a 7 out of 10? That is on Sunday at 4 p.m. At the bonus stage. So come hang out. Don't be offended if I don't shake hands or anything. I'm already going to get real sick from this, so I'm going to try to not get ultra sick. I'm just I'll walk in and take a breath and then fucking fall over and die. Knock on wood here.
We could get you like a hazmat suit.
Yeah, just fall in a hazmat. Yeah, so that is that's the call to action here. Otherwise, you know the stuff you can do to support us: ratings, reviews, iTunes, wherever you get this, Patreon, etc. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, sir.
All right. I have been Cole Ross. I will be back streaming the weekend after this one at Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I have been Dennis Furia. You can find me on the Deck of Wonders Discord.
I have been David Mysmith. You can find me on Twitter, at least for now.
What?
It's bad.
You're on Twitter?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one, but I like it. Passive aggro.
Yes.
All right.
I have that as well.
What else do you have?
Oh, goodness. I have the Not There box. I have Pack Scroat. and then I have The Days When Being an Edgelord Was Fun.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure I had any. This has been a week.
No, that's fine.
I also did not have any, but that feels better than having pack skirt. So
yeah, I'm not good.
having an empty title would be better than that.
Passive aggro has it by votes.
All right. Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
So, David, I've found Revenant 777, but that is not posted since 2011.
No, I have Money Smith 777.
Okay.
And I warn you, it is like 90% memes. Because
as everything on Twitter should be.
I am that type of person. Did you see what now only people who pay Twitter will show up in the like recommended tweets or whatever?
And the for you. For you is useless anyway.
Is it?
Just to do the following. I want to see tweets from people I follow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just, I mean, it is decided.